and it's linked to systemic illnesses and coming up with better solutions. So we're really excited to talk about the mouth because it's something near and dear to my heart. My best friend, Dr. Michael LaPelt, is a dentist, licensed acupuncturist, and licensed naturopathic physician, and really has been a very big spokesperson for the idea that the mouth is connected to the rest of the body. It seems like silly, but for some reason, there's been this disconnect. Dr. Madahi, are you there?
I am here. Hello, Dr. C. How are you?
Great to meet you. I'm so glad to have you on. Well, let's talk a little bit about your background. So, you know, you start off as a dentist, but, you know, you've seen things change over your career as a dentist. Old-time naturopathic doctors have always talked about the theory of host resistance versus the germ theory. Unfortunately, you know, I taught medical history for many years. They were often castigated for, you know, saying that the germ theory was partially right. And even people like Semmelweis and Pasteur on his deathbed said, it's not the germ, it's the soil. And so that kind of brings me around to talk about why dentistry became like allopathic medicine, embracing the germ theory versus the theory of host resistance. So why did dentists become believers in this theory?
Yeah, I think, first of all, thank you for having me and allowing me to elaborate on some of these thoughts and sort of research and ideas. I think what has happened in the past 70 years of dental research, what they have found is that cavities caused by bacteria and gum disease is caused by bacteria and bad breath is caused by bacteria. So the entirety of focus has been on how do we get rid of these bacteria or the harmful bacteria in the mouth in order to get rid of or reduce cavities or get rid of gum disease or reduce gum disease and get rid of bad breath. And unfortunately, this is not the way to go about it because what they have done, and not only in dentistry, but in the whole product world as a whole, is they've made the bacteria the end-all, be-all to all sorts of things that are going on, which is not true. Number one, we wouldn't be alive without bacteria. We are made out of bacteria. We're talking about somewhere between 70 to 100 trillion bacterial cells in our body to about 10 trillion human cells. So we are more made up of bacteria than we are made up of human cells. Secondly, maybe only tops 2% of the bacteria that are out there are harmful bacteria. That means that there's 90% of the bacteria that's out there are good, healthy, and protected bacteria. What are they protecting us against is disease and infection. So by going and destroying this bacteria, we're causing more harm than actually being able to cure diseases, infections, and all sorts of things that are happening to our body. And the thing that I've always focused on is that how did we ever survive for thousands of years without modern medicine? Without all of these antibacterial, without the antibiotics and all of these things. It is true that we used to die a lot younger, but at the same time, longevity, it's not associated with modern medicine. If you look at why we're also living longer, the two key factors is clean water and hygiene, more than modern medicine. So some of these things have gotten lost over the years, and we have become super focused on something we can get rid of as quickly as possible. And we have made the bacteria the culprit for all sorts of things. I think that would be a way to explain what's happened to dentistry or many other things that are being practiced in the present moment.
Well, thank you for that. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And people have been cultivating the microbiome for years. I'm glad that there's, you know, that they're exploding with a lot of the research and understanding and mapping the microbiome. All that's very interesting. But it might be superfluous information because traditional cultures have used, you know, I don't know if you know of the dentist Weston Price, who was a one of the most interesting dentists that I've ever seen back at the turn of the last century, who traveled around the world looking at the mouth of many indigenous people and finding amazingly good dental hygiene without, or dental health without, you know, all the modern types of hygienic things that we have, mouthwashes and things like that. These folks, they ate well, they used chew sticks, they used different natural probable antimicrobials that are found. You know, being an ethnobotanist, myself, I'm very interested to look at, you know, at indigenous people and their mouth and their overall health. Not to say that, like you said, modern medicine hasn't, in, you know, helped with certain diseases and injuries and things like that, terrible traumatic injuries. But there's a lot to be said for all the things that nature can provide for the health of the mouth. What's your comment on that?
Yeah, I think when you're talking about the indigenous people and when you're looking at why certain things that are happening in their mouth that is not explained by sort of the Western dental protocols, I think it goes, first of all, back down to diet. So if you look at people in China, when you look at people in India, the recurrency of cavities and decay is very, very low. So you can hardly see any cavities in their mouth. And you start to look as to why. Why is that the case? And because there's not as much processed sugar in their diet. So there's multiple things you're looking at. Is one, what is nature providing? And then the other thing is that what does developed countries do with the food source and what we're eating? And the where we have added sugar to everything that we eat in the Western world, you'll see that the decay started to take place as well. Now, in order to overcome all of this consumption of processed sugar, now you have to do so many other things to overcome it. But if you could reduce processed sugar, all of a sudden, you have much less problems. And it goes about many different things that we're eating. I mean, when you have pesticides, the pesticides themselves become such an antibacterial, antimicrobial, so that they destroy so much of also the good bacteria, not only in your mouth, in your gut. When you're talking about meats, and the meat already has antibiotic in it and hormones in it, it affects your mouth, it affects the microbiome. So much of the diet and what we're eating is contributing to all the different problems that we have. And when you go to these regions with the indigenous people, that's not the case because the diet and the food source is not so tainted as well.
Right. Yeah, exactly. So I know you've done a lot of work, of course, as many dentists have, of course, with gingivitis. Tell us the linear progression to periodontal disease. Like, what happens with the average, like Americans say? And I know you've seen oral health change over your 30-year career as a dentist. So what are you seeing now?
So I think the first thing I would like to start with is that there's really no linear progression of gum disease related to age. I mean, I think that comes as a surprise to people because people believe, oh, you've gotten older now, therefore you have gum recession or bone loss or this or that and everything else. The two are unrelated. And the reason for it is this. In order for you to have any disease, it has to start with some sort of an inflammation. So when we're talking about gum disease, we're talking inflammation of the gum, which is gingivitis. All gingivitis means is that the gums are inflamed. Why are they inflamed? They can be inflamed for many reasons. But one of the main is active bacterial growth, because in the plaque there is bacteria. If the plaque is not removed properly, it hardens, becomes calculus or tartar, and then these within the tartar and the plaque, there is bacteria that are secreting all sorts of toxins that are destroying either the teeth or the gums. So the key part of it is that gingivitis at any age can be reversed. How can it be reversed? One is by making sure that you are removing the plaque off of your teeth correctly. I'm talking about by brushing and flossing, one. And then the other part is by getting proper cleaning. Now, there are certain people, due to some genetic backgrounds, they get more tartar buildup, more plaque buildup. They tend to have more aggressive type of bacteria in their mouth. But in general, the key part of it is just making sure we are reversing gingivitis. If we reverse gingivitis, and we know that we have gingivitis, then there should not be any reason for bone loss or gum disease. So this progression that we're talking about is not really related to age. More, it is related to some of the things we're not doing properly, or how there are certain changes that are going on within the mouth that's more contributing to these problems than we know. And this becomes the whole thing. If rinsing your mouth with something that kills 99.9% of the germs that many brands are advocating was the right thing to do, then why would you have more incidence of gum disease? Why do you have more cavities? And why do you still have suffer from all sorts of things with bad breath? If that was the key part of what you would have to do. So you start to look into is that some of the traditional types of oral care products that are being presented to you to handle some of these things, they're not really doing that much or doing very little in order to prevent where we have the cavities and gum disease. So this opens up the discussion as to what should we do when we have an influx of processed sugar in the diet, influx of antibiotics and all sorts of things in the meats, and also we're using so much hand sanitizers and other things that are constantly destroying the microbiome within the mouth, but it's not really protecting you where it should be protecting you. And now you have more problems in your mouth. So what do we do in order to reduce the inflammation? I think that's where we need to go. And I would tell you, if you rinse your mouth with salt water, you would get more of an inflammation to go down than using many other things that are on the shelf. You don't need all sorts of mouthwashes with different colors in order to reduce inflammation. You know, sea salt and water does a very great job. If you brush your teeth properly, even with water, that's okay in terms of removal of plaque. Toothpaste is not going to do so much in terms of prevention of some of these things. So we go back to basics, and these basics tells you that it's just a very simple things to do in order to keep inflammation down and then not have gum disease develop. It's a simplistic viewpoint, but it is true in 80% of the cases.
So I know inflammation is, you know, part of the response to, you know, there's good inflammation and chronic inflammation. Of course, there's acute and chronic. Yes. So it's the more chronic we're looking at reducing. But there's also, you know, that whole idea, again, versus the germ theory. You know, we've been talking a lot about germs, even though we're, you know, mentioning the fact that, you know, killing the germs with the mouthwash doesn't seem to be working, because we're having a lot of problems with our society's teeth. So I like your idea. So there's got to be something more to it. Now, diet, of course, you're getting a lot of phytonutrients that helps the host resistance. And I know one of my students did his thesis on, he was a dentist too that studied at my program. And he did his thesis on the effects of the polyphenols found in foods, which are these very powerful anti-inflammatory compounds, and looked at their health in the gums, including the flavonoids and the polyphenols, and found that there was quite a bit of scientific literature supporting that probably that's one of the phytonutrients in our diet that also helps with the gums. What's your reading on that?
There's been studies with regards to polyphenols and also some of these things in even olive oil. You see that the Mediterranean diet, people in Italy, again, they're not suffering as much in terms of gum disease, and it could be contributed to also the olive oils they're eating and all that. So there is a certain amount of anti-inflammatory nutrients in the diet that you consume that naturally would cause the inflammation to go down. It's absolutely correct. Mm-hmm. And you see that more outside of the United States. So I can even tell you one of my experiences. I used to treat some patients in Milan for multiple years. And when I would look at their x-rays, and I would look at their root canals, most of their root canals were incomplete, poorly done. Yet, there was absence of infection in their teeth. You would see no symptoms, no pus, nothing on the x-ray. Yet, when I would look at those types of x-rays with my American patients, I would see that there's 80% of those teeth developed some sort of infection. And it was mind-boggling when 80% of the root canals are poorly done, you don't have infection, when only maybe 20% of the root canals are not being properly done here, you see so much more infection. Why is that? So it goes back to the whole concept of beyond germ. It's the whole concept of the host response and the way that your body is responding to different things that are going on with your gums, with your teeth, with your bone inside. And this host response somehow is being compromised in many different ways. It is true that it is beyond germ theory. It is a host response, but the host is being inundated by multiple things that are going on from the outside. And that's the part of the reason why you start to look at a lot of the different things that are now, what is it that's harming our body? What is it that's harming our immune system and the way that we are handling the different things that are happening to our body? So it comes back to your case of host response is a key, and looking at that and making sure what is compromising that host response is a key way of looking at disease as a whole.
Yeah, I'm so glad that dentists are at the forefront. For some reason, dentistry has been kind of, I don't know what the word is without being disparaging, but medicine has sort of said, well, you know, the mouth has nothing to do with the rest of the body. I guess that's the best way to say it. Now, I taught rheumatology for decades at the University of Bridgeport, and found a huge relationship between various microorganisms such as P. gingivalis and autoimmune disease. And there's actually a marker that we measure in medicine called anti-CCP antibody that they didn't know about many years ago, but is now the hallmark of rheumatoid arthritis, especially a very aggressive rheumatoid arthritis. And it's very much linked to periodontal disease. So what's the relationship between oral health and your whole body health? I know you talk about that in one of your books, which was brilliant.
Yeah. So I think if you look at the research in the past 30 years, one of the key themes that we see over and over, there is a relationship between gum disease and heart disease, kidney disease, colorectal cancer, premature babies, Alzheimer with P. gingivalis that you just talked about. So we sort of see that relationship being all over the place. There is no real organ of the body is not somehow something that's happening in the mouth, and what's happening in the mouth is the gum disease part of it. The question becomes, why? What is it that's happening there that is causing all of these problems? And I'll tell you where the difficulty is. And then it goes more back to the point of the germ theory. So they're talking about, oh, because of these bacteria that are in the mouth, is somehow these bacteria are causing heart disease. But when you go to the different sites, you don't see the bacteria there. So if the bacteria is not there, what is actually causing it? And this is, again, something that I'm very much of intense research with our own group. And what we're looking at is we're looking at inflammatory markers.
Right.
TNF-alpha, immunoglobulin B. What we see that these, whatever is happening in the mouth in terms of the gum inflammation and gum disease, there's inflammatory markers. And these inflammatory markers now can actually spread throughout the body because there are multiple ways of what's happening in the mouth to be able to get into the bloodstream or go throughout the body. And the easy ways is that if you have any type of gingivitis because of the bleeding gums, anything that's happening in your mouth can easily get into the bloodstream just through the gingivitis aspect of it. Number two is your mouth is one of the most absorbent tissues of your body. That's the reason if anybody's having a heart attack, they're asking them to put nitroglycerin pill underneath their tongue because the route of absorption is faster than if you actually swallow those pills. And we did also a study with these colored mouthwashes and having the dye and also the denatured alcohol getting absorbed into our body within 60 seconds of rinsing your mouth with this dyed mouthwash with this denatured alcohol. And after 5 minutes, we even saw more dye in the body, in the bloodstream. Even though you're just swishing with it and spitting it out, it still gets absorbed in your body. So we have to look at the mouth in a very different manner. It's not just you're chewing something and you're swallowing it. It's getting absorbed into your body and it's getting into your blood system very rapidly. So inflammatory markers are now spreading all over the place. And if inflammatory markers are spreading all over the place, what's happening with heart disease is inflammation that's going on. And then there's a plaque buildup due to the inflammation. And the inflammatory markers that are there is what's causing some of these issues. And on top of some other things that are going on, also with viruses that are in our body as well. So there is quite a different way of looking at things rather than just looking at bacteria alone.
Yeah. And then there's also this whole idea that, you know, the molecular mimicry, where, you know, they've done this with many species of bacteria, that they look kind of like, or parts of them look like the connective tissue. So the body starts to attack the mimic, which again can spread. They call that epitope spreading, where it spreads, like you said, throughout the body. And, you know, so you have the periodontal illness, but now you have the rheumatoid arthritis that's kicking up there too. So really interesting stuff. But we need to take a break. I'm looking at the time. And when we return with Dr. Madahi, we're going to be talking a little bit about some, you know, natural things that the microbiome more. I want him to define plaque. Is it the same as biofilm? And we'll talk about, you know, how bacteria in the mouth makes vitamins, and then also problems that people have, dry mouth. And then we'll talk a little bit about some safe things that we can do to keep our body, mouth, and overall health really, really well. So stay with us, folks. We'll be right back.
On this edition of the Natural Medicine Chest, we'll explore the medicinal properties of the plants of the ephedra genera, focusing on the traditional Chinese ephedra, also known as mahuang.
Many species of the plant ephedra are used today in medicine throughout the world. The most medicinal of these are ephedra sinica, or Chinese mahuang, and ephedra nevadensis, also known as Mormon tea. Most of the research on ephedra has been performed on mahuang, whose stems and branches have been used as a traditional Chinese medicine for over 5,000 years in the treatment of asthma, hay fever, bronchitis, as well as the common cold.
Ephedra species are erect evergreen shrubs which grow in segmented bamboo-like joints reminiscent of straw, ending in thin wisps. They typically are desert plants, preferring arid conditions on dry, rocky, and sandy slopes. The Chinese ephedra, mahuang, has earned an impressive reputation as a source of the alkaloid chemical called ephedrine. In the West, scientists became interested in the medicinal usage of mahuang after they isolated ephedrine and pseudoephedrine in 1923. Today, synthetic derivatives have become widely used in prescription and over-the-counter medications. In 1993, over 40 million prescriptions in the U.S. contained these alkaloids.
Ephedra and its relatives are considered to act pharmacologically as sympathomimetic compounds. This means that they stimulate the sympathetic part of our central nervous system, responsible for the release of adrenaline, which leads to the fight or flight response. Ephedra also affects the cardiovascular system by increasing the blood pressure and causes a relaxation and dilation of the bronchial smooth muscles in asthmatics. Ephedra can shrink the swelling of the delicate mucous membranes which line the respiratory system, thus drying up watery discharges, unstuffing clogged nasal and sinus passages, which accompany colds, sinus conditions, and allergies.
In both animal and human studies, mahuang has been shown to accelerate weight loss. It has been shown not only to suppress appetite, but to increase the metabolic activity of the adipose or fat tissue. Therefore, ephedra's weight-reducing effects are most significant in individuals who have a low metabolic rate or a sluggish thyroid gland.
Mahuang is a powerful herb which, when abused, can cause some unwanted side effects. Ephedra should not be taken by those with high blood pressure, nervousness or anxiety, insomnia, cardiac conditions, or pregnancy. Studies indicate that when used in conjunction with other Chinese herbs in a traditional formula, mahuang does not have any of these effects and has remarkable beneficial effects on human health.
We recommend consulting a healthcare practitioner knowledgeable in the use of botanical medicine before using mahuang, so you can be further educated about its totality of effects. And before using herbal preparations with mahuang, check to see if you are sensitive to its effects by starting with the minimal dose and working up to a therapeutic dose. Logically, since ephedra is a stimulant itself, it should be used prudently with other stimulants, beverages, or drugs with stimulant effects. Again, consult with your natural healthcare practitioner.
So, listeners, remember mahuang. the traditional Chinese ephedra, and make sure to include it in your natural medicine chest.
Here, and we're really excited to continue our discussion with Dr. Madahi, who graduated in 1983 and has been a dentist for many, many years, and really has changed his thinking, embracing natural aspects of oral care, oral microbiome, and even helping patients whitening their teeth without hydrogen peroxide and other very caustic substances. And we're having a great discussion here. Welcome back, doctor.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me.
Yeah. So let's talk a little bit about, you know, we've been talking about the microbiome as if the listeners kind of know about that. And then,
yeah,
you know, we all have heard about plaque, but is that the same as biofilm that, you know, people in medicine use the word more biofilm? Are those two the same thing, doctor?
Yeah. Yes, it is. Yeah. It is the biofilm, but I just want to make sure we understand that in our studies over the years, every plaque is not similar to another plaque. So you could have plaque that is not actually inflammatory, and there's plaque that is quite inflammatory. So the biofilm that we're talking about in a traditional sense is has different types of bacteria in it that is causing a lot of the issues with the gums.
So what does the bacteria do? What do they create, like a force field so that they can, the outer, you know, kind of like the insects where they take turns going in the inside to keep the hive warm, and then the outer bees are sort of put to the outside. It's almost, that's the way I understand biofilm. It's sort of like a mechanism for how the bacteria can shield themselves from the outside influences that might try to kill or harm them.
Yeah, shield them and in essence, produce toxins that could cause damage. So, and because bacteria grows, it doubles every 20 minutes inside the mouth, this is part of the issue of how do you protect yourself against an ever-growing type of bacteria that's in the mouth that's somehow difficult to get rid of because now it's shielded within the plaque. So if you don't remove the plaque, then again, there is issues with it as well. This is a simplistic sort of explanation to all of this, which we will get a little bit more into as to there are simpler ways of handling all of this and not being so concerned about what's happening in the plaque and all of that. I think if you start to look at, first of all, what is a microbiome? I think it's a good point to actually describe what the microbiome is. Microbiome is a network of organisms, microorganisms, mainly made out of bacteria, but there's viruses and fungi in it. And there's also bad bacteria within the microbiome. And where is the microbiome? Microbiome is on your skin, so it's the most amount of microbiome is actually coating the skin. It's in your eyes, it's in your nose, it's in your ears, it's in your mouth, it's in your gut, it's in the birth canal. So now we start to look at, since the microbiome is actually covering everything and somehow is everywhere, what's the mode of operation? What does it do? So the simplest answer to this is that it's taking up real estate. So imagine in your mouth is covered with microbiome, and the real estate is taking up. It doesn't let other bad bacteria or viruses to come in. And in order for something to grow, they have to adhere to the tissue and then grow. So if the microbiome is taking up the real estate, it doesn't allow other things to be able to get in there and adhere and grow. That's one mode of operation. And the second mode of operation is how it works with your immune system. Because it has a bad bacteria and good bacteria, there is some sort of an equilibrium to make sure that there is no disease or anything getting developed. But by having these bad bacteria, it helps the immune system produce antibodies against different things that are within the microbiome at very low levels. So if the levels increase, the immune system already has antibodies that can combat against it. So it is a symbiotic relationship between the microbiome and the immune system, which is the host response. And then there's also the fact that it's just taking up real estate. So these are now what we're talking about. So this is why I am so much against this 70 years of research in dentistry, because we have now elected the bacteria to be the bad thing, and then we're killing it. And in turn, what we are doing, we're destroying also the microbiome by, when we say we killed 99.9% of the germs, guess what? That's what the microbiome is. That's what is protecting us. And this has happened also with skincare. So many different products that would also destroy the microbiome. But today, when you look at skincare, they've gone to much cleaner ingredients, and it's trying not to destroy the microbiome, because something about the microbiome has been understood in the skin and also in the gut, and the microbiome in the gut, how it's contributing to the promotion and production of dopamine and serotonin in the brain, and vitamin K production. There's so many different things that is vital in terms of the bacteria that we have in our body.
Well, I was going to say that, so we shouldn't like swish our mouths with proper bacteria, which research has maybe showed is good for the microbiome. There's other ways to cultivate this microbiome.
So in my view and in our research, what we are trying to do, we are staying away with anything that actually kills the bacteria. So we're going to go back to the basics. There was a study done about 20 years ago by one of my colleagues and friends, and also a co-founder in one of my companies, Dr. Nozari, that was done on homeless kids in Manila. This is the landmark study that completely changed my mind about how do we go about oral health, whole body health. And in this particular study, was done with the homeless kids in Manila, where they were suffering from a particular gum disease, from a particular type of bacteria called AA bacteria. Now, AA bacteria infects maybe more than 1.5 to 2 billion people in the world. You see it in Asia, you see it in the Middle East, Philippines, and South America. And there is penetration of all these people migrating also to the United States. And I have seen some of these people also in my own practice. It's very, very, it has a very, very unique characteristic. And the characteristic is that it damages the gum and the bone around the four upper front teeth, four lower front teeth, and the back first molars. Everything else is okay. There's no bone loss. There's no gum recession, but around these teeth, there's quite a bit of bone loss and gum recession. What he had these homeless kids do is just rub sea salt on their gums twice a day. And what he found after a 10-year study, the gum disease stopped, yet the AA bacteria was still there. So if AA bacteria is the cause, and you haven't killed the AA bacteria, why did the disease stop? This goes to the basic principle, is the toxin. So what dentistry wanted to do, because it couldn't get rid of the toxin, it got rid of the bacteria, but along with the bad bacteria, got rid of all of the good bacteria. And once you get rid of the good bacteria, you make that real estate disappear, and now more bad bacteria and viruses can actually come in and adhere to the tissues and grow. So we are staying away today. Our belief is we are staying away from doing anything that's antibacterial in the mouth. We don't want to kill any bacteria. We don't want to use anything that actually kills any bacteria. People are talking to me about we can do something to make the microbiome better. I'm staying away from enhancing the microbiome. I'm staying away from anything that would destroy the microbiome. I'm staying away from anything that would do anything with any bacteria inside the mouth. What we want is that we want to protect the bacteria in its native state, because that native state is what has helped us all along. Now, does oil pulling work? Of course it does. I'm not saying it doesn't. It does. It does. It gets rid of toxins within the gum, all of these different things. But does oil pulling a form of antibacterial treatment? It is. For that reason, I'm not so for it. So what is the way to go about it? What is the way to go about it? I think the way is, let's find something that doesn't change the microbiome, doesn't change the equilibrium, doesn't kill any bacteria, good or bad. Now, before I get into this, I just want to tell you, killing bad bacteria, there's a problem with it. Because within the cell wall, which you know very well, that within the cell wall of the gram-negative bacteria, there's toxins. So when you kill the bad bacteria, you also produce toxins. And those toxins are also harmful to you and your body.
So like the Herxheimer effect.
Yeah.
When you kill things, yeah. Mm-hmm. Interesting.
So now the interesting part is that if you don't kill the bad bacteria, they produce toxins that cause gum disease, bad breath, and tooth decay. If you kill the bad bacteria, they produce toxins that also can be harmful to your body, inflammation, heart problems, or other things that could be due to this toxin that's within the cell wall of the bad bacteria. So you are damned if you kill them, you're damned if you don't kill them. Okay? So the approach became something different. Okay. Do we know the exact toxins of the bacteria, streptococcus mutans, that cause tooth decay? Yes, we know the exact toxin. Do we know the toxin of the bacteria P. gingivalis that causes gum disease? Yes, we know. Do we know the toxin of what happens in terms of sulfur-producing compounds that causes bad breath? Yes, we do know. Okay. So how do we now go neutralize the toxins that are being produced, not the bacteria themselves? This is a whole new approach. This is a new science that I'm talking to you about. This is the holy grail approach, because you're not killing anything, you're not producing any more toxins, and yet you're getting rid of the harmful toxins as well. And you don't change the equilibrium. This is where our research has gone into, and our formulation of some products have come about, that we have now proven that what we are doing is we're just neutralizing toxins rather than killing the bacteria. So if you ask me,
there's something about the Dead Sea salt that supports the healthy mouth. I know that's one of the key ingredients that you've been researching.
Yes. So the Dead Sea salt has two beneficial effects. One is that it's beneficial effect in terms of anti-inflammatory effects and everything else, but it's a high mineral content. Right, and your teeth are made of mineral. So if you look at it, when you are using the table salt has only 2% minerals. When you use sea salt, it's 20% mineral. When you use Himalayan salt, it's 40% mineral. When you're talking about Dead Sea salt, it's 86% mineral. That's why that is one of the key ingredients in all of the products that we're using is the Dead Sea salt. That's one of the main reasonings behind it.
What about the coconut? I noticed that in some of your research, you've advocated coconut as part of the process to get a good microflora in the mouth?
No, so the coconut, actually, we're using it for a different reason.
Oh, okay.
Coconut oil, or coconut oil is, at some levels, is antibacterial. So what we have done is that we have used the whitening effect of the lauric acid within the coconut oil as a whitening agent, along with sage oil and lemon peel oil as a whitening agent rather okay. than an antibacterial. So what we have found in the levels that you're using in our products, we are whitening, but we're not destroying the bacteria at all. So we're not using the antibacterial effects of it, but we're using it as a whitening agent.
Yeah, because lauric acid and caprylic acid are very, I wouldn't say potent antivirals and antifungals, but I've used them in patients with candidiasis and other issues like that, no doubt. But I guess they seem to have a good effect on the whitening effect of the, you know, more of a cosmetic effect. So are essential oils?
So you're using it as a higher concentration. Yes.
Yes. Okay. It makes sense that there's a dose dependent, the Anschluss law of pharmacology. Now, are essential oils safe in low amounts for the mouth? Because some oils are toxic in large amounts, and some people say, oh, you know, really shouldn't be using too many essential oils because they're, you know, very powerful.
Yeah. So there comes the other side of the natural product. So when we're looking at natural products, so one of the other things I think people forget is that most of modern medicine has come from all of the Eastern medicine plants, right? Plants and all of these different things that were there. And now they have changed it into medications. So those plants in the Eastern medicine are also sort of a medication. They have effect on the body. So when we are using these essential oils are quite potent and can cause all sorts of issues as well. That's why I mentioned it's very dose dependent. So what we have done in our research is bring the dosages down to certain levels that we're getting certain type of effects without creating any type of toxicity or creating any type of a toxic reaction as well. You're absolutely right about that.
Right, because, you know, I mean, if you go way back to the 1800s in the era of patent medicines, you know, the classic, the one that begins with an L that everyone uses, let's put it that way, had thymol, eucalyptol, methyl salicylate, and something I'm probably forgetting. And then, of course, in England, they use quite a bit of oil of a clove or allspice pimento diocia, which is used in West Indian culture. Of course, these are anesthetics in the mouth, too, but they also have a lot of tannins, which strengthen the gum tissue as far as botanical ingredients. But, you know, they do have some of those essential oils, but probably not enough in the plants to do anything. See, that's the thing. When you start taking out essential oils and concentrating them, then they become almost like allopathic medication.
Yeah, absolutely. Because the plants themselves, you need to use so much of the plant to get the same effect of the oils. And the oils are so much more potent. But also, if you look at it, in some of these oral care products, they use some of these words in the product descriptions or ingredients, but they're not using it as oil forms. They're using it as plant, which has zero effect in terms of what it's trying to do. They're using it to sort of spruce up the ingredients list. So it's very difficult now to understand when you're looking at the ingredients, is what is being used, how much of it is being used, the effectiveness of that dose, in an oil form, plant form, all of these different things has become so confusing in terms of the general population. And this is also part of the reason why I am against mouthwashes with a lot of concentrations of tea tree oil. Again, tea tree is at a certain concentration because of antibacterial. Again, I'm against that as well. So it's a bit of a complication where you think these things are good for you, but you don't understand. It's all dose dependent. And at certain dosages, again, it's as if you're taking antibiotics, as if you are changing. There's something within the microbiome and thing in your mouth, in your body, because you are consuming some of these things. Again, we want to keep that equilibrium and not attack the body with these types of things either. Oils or antibiotics or pesticides or any of these things. All of them, to some degree, also have similar effects in one sense of the word in terms of destruction of bacteria.
Right, because every time you use one of these, whether it's a supernatural one with a powerful essential oils or some of the prescription ones that are used in dentistry, you keep knocking the oral microbiome back, and then it has to regrow, and yeah. I guess you lose species diversity. That's one of the interesting things, I think. You get like a monoculture in your mouth. That's what happens in nature with the rainforest and your front lawn even. You know, and it happens in the mouth with the microbiome. You get fewer diversity of microbes, and that can lead to problems, I would assume.
Yeah, definitely, because certain the effects of some of these oils or some of these products is definitely more on certain types of bacteria. As a result, you are changing the diversity. But I also have to tell you, one of the interesting things that we have found in our research is that once you stop using any particular product for 1 week, we have seen the microbiome get back to its normal equilibrium. This is an interesting thing, and that's why in many of the dental research, they use a 1 week washout period. And this is particular to the mouth. It is not true in the gut as much as it is true in the mouth. It's because of the rate of growth of bacteria in the mouth is very different. And the diversity is so different that it can reseed itself if in the absence of this type of an attack by any particular drug, medication, or any type of a product.
What about better sweeteners that I always see saccharin in all these things and I run away?
Yeah, so the only sweetener that we are not opposed to is the one that, so again, let's go back to sweeteners. Again, these are modified, these are chemicals. Long-term effect of some of these chemicals are not so known. So when you're using these modified things, again, what you're doing, you're disrupting some part of what is happening. So again, any artificial sweeteners, we're actually very much against it. We're not into any type of artificial sweeteners at all. Again, chemicals. We want to stay away from any types of chemicals that we're putting in our mouth, and then which has an effect on the rest of the body.
Yeah, thank you. Well, this has been a very enlightening interview, Dr. Madahi. I'm really excited to. You have a very unique way of looking at the dentistry. Can you give out your website to the listeners as we run out of time here? We have about 2 more minutes in the program where they can get more information on your research, or I know you have some interesting products you've developed there. You know, we're non-commercial, but people can get more information by contacting you or a particular website.
Yeah. So the products that we're talking about is called Luminal. And luminalhealth.com is the website where you can see all of our research under the studies. And you can see the different regimens in terms of our clean and fresh toothpaste mouthwash or whitening toothpaste mouthwash, whitening strips, all of these things that have no peroxide. We're using low dosage of essential oils in terms of whitening. We're using dead sea salt as a key ingredient you know, all of our products. And the thing that we didn't really talk about, which is a huge area of explosion in terms of dry mouth, and dry mouth because of lack of saliva is causing so many cavities and recurrent cavities, and you cannot really manage it very much due to the dry mouth, is also another area that we're very concerned about. And again, we have dry mouth hydrating mouthwash to increase the saliva flow. We don't need more water, we need more saliva. So the luminalhealth.com is where you can see the products, and you can see the research, and you can understand all of the ingredients that are in the products.
So that's L-U-M, like Michael, I-N, Nicholas, E-U-X.
That's
L-U-M-I-N-E-U-X. Hey, thank you for being a guest on our program. We really learned a lot, and we look forward and encourage folks to do more research on their oral health, because it's connected to the rest of your body. The mouth is just not by itself. Please leave us with a final thought.
So we got to go back to old ways of we were doing things. Let's really watch out what we're putting in our body, and bacteria are your friends. They're not your enemies.
Yes, thank you very much for that. And that does it for another edition of The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. We want you to stay healthy. Remember, go to our websites. That's naturalnurse.com or Dr. Z Naturally, drznaturally.com. And make it a great day and stay healthy, folks. Bye.